listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast, brought to you by Lakewood Chev. If you're looking for a better pre-owned buying experience, Lakewood Chev has certified pre-owned vehicles that are fully inspected, warranted by General Motors, and have a 30-day exchange privilege. It's Lakewood Chev. Schauger, the Oilers take care of business against the Sharks. Was not their best game overall. Their best players were definitely their best players, which is what matters most in big games. And now they move on to take on a Ducks team that coughed up a 3-1 lead in Winnipeg last night, and now legitimately first place on the line tomorrow night. Should be a heck of a game.
Yeah, no question. And it's kind of, I think it's going to be this way for the next few games here. They're playing head-to-head against these teams that they're chasing in the standings that they're trying to stay ahead of. But it's just been – it's almost – we've kind of almost forgotten what this is like when the team that you cover is in the playoffs, jockeying for position, playing games that are just monumentally important in late March and early April. So you get through the L.A. game and they clinch, and then they manage to get past the San Jose Sharks. And now they're facing the very team that they're battling for that division with. And it's just the way games are supposed to be this time of year. And the schedule maker had some good foresight, because they're playing all the right teams at the right time right now to be able to take control of their own destiny and put themselves in good position. But not a great start for them last night, but really, really nice finish.
Well, I thought excellent rebound in the first period. The Sharks dominated. It was 12-3 in shots for the first 10 minutes, and then the Oilers outshot the Sharks 8-1 in the last 10 and outscored them 2-1, and really that's where the game turned.
Well, and that's an exact kind of microcosm, a small period of what playoff hockey is like. It's not very often you build up those 2-3-4-goal leads in the postseason. Often the games are tight checking. Obviously, lots of times it's a one-goal game, and this is just repetition after repetition of simulated playoff hockey. I mean, Todd McLellan even said, I remember it was last night or today now, the two interviews are blending in together, but that he doesn't know how much higher things can ramp up as far as what playoff hockey ends up looking like, and that they're basically in it right now. And he's got a group that can respond. And, I mean, holy smokes, the pace that McDavid and Draisaitl and Maroon are going at right now is unbelievable. I mean, they're, if not the best line in hockey right now, certainly one of the top two, and maybe outside of the guys in Washington, but they're absolutely killing it. So it's just been unbelievable to watch the extent to which they're driving this team every single night.
Well, yeah, those two are dominant right now. It's as a duo in the NHL on the same line today, there's no one more dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, it's unreal. And then you got Patrick Maroon, who was the one who scored the two goals. So, I mean, the skill set's unbelievable. And I just don't know how they get away from playing those two guys together. They've just been so dominating playing together. And you look at the way their styles complement one another. Like, Draisaitl just has this, you know, fantastic ability to make all kinds of passes tape to tape out of all kinds of situations. And he's just so good at getting the puck on Connor's stick and putting him in positions. And then McDavid, it just does his thing. And man, it's just been an incredible tandem. And I just don't know how they get away from that. And making plans moving forward into the next, you know, few years. I mean, you got Puljujärvi coming, and maybe there'll be a nice fit there. But Draisaitl could be a winger for the foreseeable future. Whether people think that's healthy for the organization or not, you know, I don't know. You can debate it. But I just don't know how you split those guys up when you see what they're capable of.
Yeah, for this season, no doubt. Will it be a long-term one? Many other factors come into play. I think we'll see if it happens for a year or two. But I think ultimately, eventually, you see Leon Draisaitl, I think, on his own line. Just because I think it's something that will happen. It doesn't necessarily have to. But I think you could see him on his line, and then they'll, in certain games at times, they'll put him back together, kind of like Malkin and Crosby, who still, over the 10-year period, I think Malkin, even though he played center a lot, still played the sixth most minutes with Crosby.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, if that's the way it ends up going, it's because they've found another solution. So that will be positive for them, because that means they found another player that can play on the top line in a positive solution. So, and maybe it's Puljujarvi, maybe Eberle has a bounce back year. Who knows what it looks like? But I don't know that they'll find a solution that propels both players into the top 10 in NHL scoring. And that's just, this is a level that is not going to be easy to find again, depending on, you know, I mean, really whoever else they bring in. You've got two guys, I mean, the leading scorer in the league and another guy that's in that top 10 and in his, what, second full season. So, man, it'll be tough to find a reason not to play them together when they're capable of this. So it's a good problem to have, though. Real good problem to have.
Looking ahead now to the rest of the way for the Oilers, do you think Brassois only plays in Vancouver next weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I think you almost have to take it kind of day to day and see what the separation is like in the standings and what happens. I mean, things are so fluid right now that they're just going to have to keep throwing their best lineup out there as much as they possibly can, and that's Talbot in net. Now, if that changes at some point, and if maybe things get locked in a little bit more, then they can make decisions with a few other things in mind. But as long as they have a chance at winning that division, home ice advantage, they're fending other teams off, yeah, I would say that's probably the only scheduled start that he's got. Now, if that changes, maybe they try and get Talbot more of a rest. But what do they normally have break-wise, like end of season to start a playoffs? Like,
well, it's always a
Sunday.
Yeah, they
like
always
Wednesday?
Start. Yeah, they always start Wednesday. The Oilers, right, I'll be stunned if the Oilers aren't starting on April 12th.
And yeah, that's the Wednesday?
It's always on the Wednesday every year. Yeah. Now, you'll have four games, five sometimes on the Wednesday, and then three on the Thursday usually. The odd time there's been, yeah, some team had, I think it was Anaheim last year, had to wait until Friday due to a scheduling conflict to play at home. Yeah. But the playoffs always open up on the Wednesday after the regular season.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess to your point, I mean, if I think they do probably only have one scheduled start for him on the schedule. And if something changes standings-wise where it's not such critical times, then maybe not. But I guess they're prepared to do it. I think Talbot's shown he can handle that workload.
What did you make of Larson last night when Cam Talbot got hit by Yannick Hansen?
Yeah, well, I mean, good for him for jumping in. You can't let that happen, right? You can't have that happen. So he, you know, grabbed onto him. It was a little bit awkward. I'm not going to lie to you. It was kind of a sort of a bear hug. And Anson sort of said, well, if we're going to fight, then somebody punch someone in the face. So he did. And then, you know, once Larson realized he was actually going to be in a fist fight, he handled himself. He was fine. So, yeah, I mean, I think he was probably trying to send the message without necessarily taking an instigator penalty and putting his team down more. And so it was good. I like the intent that was there. It's not something he does often. He's not a fighter. He's not a guy that's going to go and drop the gloves and throw haymakers. So it was good intention on his part, even if it maybe was a little bit awkward. And because he went in maybe not intending to throw punches in fight, he ended up having to eat one because the other guy was, and the other guy popped him.
Yeah, well, at that time, if you go in there, I think you got to decide if you're going to go or not, right? Just holding on doesn't do, because that's why I ate the first one pretty hard.
Totally, man. He decided it was going to be a, you know, you shouldn't do that, and he bear hugged the guy and kind of waited for the linesman and everybody to show up, and then Hansen just sort of said, well, let's do this then, and just drilled him. So, I mean, maybe next time there'll be a little bit less hesitation because you got to protect yourself, but you know what? The point is when your goalie gets thumped like that, you can't stand for it. And so he didn't do nothing. And in an era where a lot of players in the league don't regularly fight, and a lot of guys have never fought, and it's just not part of what they do, that is a response. And so you'll give him credit for responding, even though it wasn't like gloves off atoning for the incident. It was just was what it was.
Ryan Oshog from TSN joins us. Shogger, looking around, you know, you see the race now for lots of trophies. A lot of people are still concerned about the Oilers' depth. I just put out an article at Oilers Nation. And when you compare it to the other teams in the Pacific, the myth about the Oilers' depth scoring doesn't really match up to the numbers.
So in what way? What's the?
Well, everybody says, oh, if the Oilers don't have enough depth scoring to win. Except they have more depth scoring amongst their second, third, and fourth line than any of the other teams in the Pacific Division.
Right, and maybe people's calibration is a little bit off because of the amount of scoring that they get from their top line, that it's obviously going to feel like a pretty big drop-off to the next layer. I guess, for me, it's less about the numbers for me and more about when they're in tight games, who's a gamer? Who can they rely on? Who do they have a really good shot of getting a big game out of? To me, that's the bigger issue. So depth of offensive reliability, how's that? Because over 75, 77 games, those guys are still going to get their points. But heading into a playoff series, how many lines can the Oilers rely on to produce offense? And well, in those big, tight games. And I think the answer is one in a little bit. You know, so it's less about the numbers spread over the course of a season and more about how many lines can they actually rely on in a big game? They've been playing some big games lately, really big playoff-type games. And there are some noticeable absences on the score sheet. Does that maybe frame it in a different way?
Well, I think if you look at it over a few games, yes. But prior to that, the Oilers went back-to-back game scoring 7 goals, and their top line only had 4 of them out of 14, yeah. Right? So for I sure. think if we go by small windows, yes, we can always look at ones and say, hey, you know what, you need more from certain lines, and that's probably valid. But overall, when you look at the course of the season start to finish, the Oilers... the amount of production they're getting from everybody other than their top three guys is very comparable to other teams in their division. And I only compared it to their division because that's who they're facing come playoff time.
Right. But, I mean, okay, so, I mean, you go back to the Vancouver game. So you got the Vancouver game wasn't a huge game. The Kings game, of course, that was a big game at the time. Anaheim, they've had San Jose, like in those games, what has that second line done? So Todd said, McClellan just said, they're in it, right? They're in it as far as this is like being in the playoffs. These games are that important. These games are that the everything is ramped up already.
Yeah. Well, the second
what
line
has that second line done.
Well, they scored the winning goal against LA.
Yeah. Who had that one again?
Well, Greiba from Nugent Hopkins.
Oh, okay.
Right. Blue Cheech was on. Yeah, but it's still that line. Like, does it matter? Yeah, they're on the ice, right? Yeah.
Sure. So they're on the ice and generated a goal. But I guess, I mean, listen, you're heading into a series against Anaheim, and secondary scoring is going to be an issue. I mean, having another line that can go against their next best line or the line they're going to face is an issue. So you can parse the data over an entire season, but I think if you just look at it and say, heading into a 7-game series, do the Oilers have an issue with secondary scoring? I think the answer is yes, that they may, based on the performances of those guys in big games. And we'll see. They'll have a great opportunity for the first time in the playoffs to prove everybody wrong. But they're calling them in large part a one-line offensive team, I don't think is that inaccurate.
Interesting, because that line has scored between the three of them, 82 goals, and the Oilers have scored 224.
Yeah, and I'm thinking a little bit less about, like, I haven't minded Lucic's production. I think the fact that both Nugent Hopkins and Eberle are having down years offensively at the same time is maybe where some of that comes from. That, you know, and Eberle picked it up, and he went on a decent little run and put some games together, and you know, I think we don't need to go too far in dumping on them because they're part of this team and this team's fighting for a division title and they have a big part in that. But going into a series against whether it's San Jose, whether it's Anaheim, certainly if it's Chicago, I think reliability of secondary scoring is an issue, you know, and I think that the Oilers get a lot from that top line, but when the chips are down, how much are they going to be able to depend on those two guys that haven't been in this situation before? And we'll see. It'll be very interesting to see if those guys can come through, frankly.
Oh, well, hey, in the playoffs, you never know how guys perform. You have one game and you score 2 goals, and you know that means they don't have to score for the next game, really, when you go on averages, right?
So, right.
I just look at the Oilers, and when you compare their teams to Anaheim or San Jose and these other, like look, San Jose, Ryan, from their forwards 4 through 12 have 79 goals. The Oilers have 108.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's a big difference. And yeah, San Jose did, sure. like Anaheim's a little skewed because they add Patrick Eaves, and I wrote that in my article. Eaves definitely helps the Ducks scoring depth, no doubt, because he's just been added, and he's been pretty good. He's got 7 goals in 15 games since being acquired from Dallas for Anaheim. But San Jose was the one team I was very surprised. After their Pavelski, Marleau, and Couture, there is a massive cavern of lacking offense from forwards 4 through 12.
Yeah. But, I mean, listen, that was a huge game last night. And it's been a couple of important games here in the last week where that second line has been a little bit MIA, where we've been sitting.
Yeah, no, but depth scoring isn't just the second line, is all I'm saying. It's all the forwards. That, to me, depth scoring isn't just the second line. It's all three lines. And the Oilers second, third, and fourth lines compared to the other teams in the Pacific are more productive. Top to bottom.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. Right. So if it's a measure of the entire lineup and their ability to produce, sure. I'm talking more about a second layer of offense. You know, we talk about top six forwards. I mean that second line. I mean, frankly, let's just call it what it is. Eberle and Nugent Hopkins haven't been here before, haven't done this before, haven't played meaningful games at this time of year, and their offense has been coming and going all year, and they're both down points wise and production wise from where they normally are. So those kind of are the facts. And what are they going to do when the chips are down? Well, in the last couple of games where they've been big-time important games, they've been just okay. So what happens when the playoffs start? Are they going to be just okay, or are they going to give the Oilers another threat? So that if Ryan Kessler does a number on Connor McDavid, like he just might be able to, they're going to be able to fight through Getzlaff. That's a big question mark to me. Maybe a little bit different than what the intention of your article.
Shogger, go read it. We'll talk on Monday.
Okay, sounds good, buddy.